John Wicks of the Records, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we're going to hear from Lukey Forbes, the civil rights coordinator for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, about efforts in Albany to pass the Clean Slate Act. It passed the state Senate last year, but not the Assembly. They're going to try to make it both houses this time. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news and after Jason Martin finishes singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Greene County will host the Household Hazardous Waste Collection event from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on October 9th. While Greene County's webpage for the event does not include the location, the webpage for the waste transfer stations in the county says it is at Greene County Highway Department, 67 Scott Lane in Athens. Anyone dropping off household hazardous waste must prove they are a county resident with a driver's license or utility bill. Normal trash and electronics and recyclables will not be accepted. Residents must attend at times by their last names, and those with the first letter of their last name beginning with A through F allowed to drop off at 8 to 9 a.m., letters G through K from 9 to 10 a.m., L through P from 10 to 11 a.m., Q through U from 11 a.m. until noon, and V through Z from noon until 1 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that the Cairo Town Board on October 3rd voted 3-2 to adopt a local law allowing retail cannabis dispensaries, reversing its previous decision to opt out. The vote followed a standing-room-only public hearing where residents spoke to both sides of the issue. Potential tax revenue was cited as one of the benefits, while a current lack of state regulations governing the industry was voiced as a concern. Quote, "A big percentage of this town is going to Massachusetts to buy pot. Why are we losing the money here?" unquote, said one man. Quote, "Why should we lose the revenue?" unquote. Another resident said, quote, "The state of New York has yet to give you the rules, regulations, and everything that is involved," unquote, noting that all of the new industry's guidelines have not been set by state regulators. New York legalized recreational cannabis in March 2021 for adults age 21 and older and gave municipalities until the end of 2021 to opt out of permitting dispensaries and/or on-site consumption lounges within their borders. Last December, the Caro Town Board opted out of both. But last year's election changed the makeup of the town board. This time, town supervisor Jason Watts and councilpersons Michael Flaherty and Deborah Boggins voted to allow retail cannabis sales, and councilpersons Mary Jo Cords and Tim Powers voted a second time for prohibition. The decision this week was to allow dispensaries only. Lounges are still not permitted. Consumption is not permitted at retail shops or dispensaries. Municipalities that opted out before the end of 2021 can reconsider at any time and rejoin the cannabis retail market. Under current law, once a town, village, or city is in, they are permanently in. According to the New York State Association of Towns, quote, "There will be a 13% tax on cannabis sales. 9% is an excise tax that will go to the state. There will also be 4% sales tax, of which 25% of that will go to the counties, and 75% will be distributed to cities, towns, and villages in proportion to the number of sales that take place within their jurisdiction," unquote. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Rachel Silverstein is reporting in the Times Union about high levels of COVID-19 in Albany, Rensselaer, Greene, and Columbia counties. Silverstein writes that New York is seeing high levels of the virus, and I quote, "at a time when pandemic-era safety measures have all but disappeared, with masking gone by the wayside, mass vaccination sites closed, and some data tracking, such as cases in schools, eliminated," end quote. Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen said wastewater surveillance also shows high levels of COVID-19, with the state's waste monitoring system showing high levels of the virus in 99% of counties. Whalen said, and I quote, "We remain concerned about COVID-19 transmission, especially as we enter the viral respiratory season, and encourage all residents to ensure they are up to date with vaccine prevention for COVID-19, including the bivalent booster dose, which offers protection against the highly contagious Omicron variants," end quote. She added, and I quote, "We also encourage flu vaccinations at this time of year," end quote. New York Department of Health spokesperson Monica Pomeroy said, and I quote, "There continues to be a correlation between lack of vaccinations or boosters and negative health outcomes related to COVID-19, which is why the New York State Department of Health continues to encourage all eligible New Yorkers to get the latest bivalent booster or to complete their initial vaccine series as soon as possible," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Mary Dempsey is reporting for Columbia Green Media that two staff members were charged October 4th in connection with the death of a 14-year-old resident of the Devereux Advanced Behavioral in Red Hook. Romelu Cruz, who lived at the Devereux facility, died September 23rd from injuries he sustained after being hit by a truck at around 4:50 a.m. on Route 9 in Claremont. Cruz was walking on the road, according to New York State Police. The two staff members, Churchill Orita, 39, and Beryl Oreck, 36, both of Poughkeepsie, were arrested and charged with first-degree endangering the welfare of an incompetent or physically disabled person and first-degree falsifying business records, both Class E felonies, and making a punishable false written statement a Class A misdemeanor. The two staff members were responsible for Cruz at the time of the accident. Both were charged following a state police investigation into the fatal accident. As part of the investigation, O'Reedy and Oreck told police that Cruz was in a good condition at their facility at 5:30 a.m. The accident that caused his death happened approximately 40 minutes earlier, roughly 4.5 miles north of the Devereux facility, according to state police. Orita and Oreck are scheduled to appear in Red Hook Court the afternoon of October 26. Devereux Advanced Behavioral Health is one of the nation's largest nonprofit organizations providing behavioral health care services. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Hudson Housing Community Development and Planning Agency is offering the Hudson Housing Authority three land parcels for a possible redevelopment project. The Hudson Housing Authority is considering demolishing its existing buildings and rebuilding, which might require more land. Sarah Black, an administrative assistant for HCDPA, said they would sell the land to the Hudson Housing Authority at one half of its appraisal value. The three parcels of land are all near existing Hudson Housing Authority property. The redevelopment being discussed would not create new affordable housing in Hudson, but would upgrade existing housing. Read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Brendan J. Lyons reports for the Times Union that State Police Superintendent Kevin P. Brin, who was appointed by former Governor Andrew Cuomo 15 months ago, is under scrutiny from Governor Kathy Hochul's office over allegations that he shielded a former human resources official from internal complaints because of their close working relationship, according to two people with knowledge of the matter. Hochul, on October 4th, confirmed that she had directed her counsel's office to look into numerous allegations that have been swirling around Buren's office for several weeks, including in posts made on private social media websites that are reserved for current and former state police members. A state police spokesperson said Brun, 59, remains on the job and has been working from his office at division headquarters in Albany. Quote, "This is an individual I inherited," unquote, Hochul said. Quote, "I will gather all the facts and I will make a determination. I think everybody's owed the investigation, which is ongoing at this time," unquote. Mary Ellen Tedescu, the former human resources director in question, resigned from the agency last month. Her resignation followed an investigation into her handling of a job application by a person who uses a wheelchair. According to a person with knowledge of the allegation, several high-ranking members of the state police brought complaints to Bruin about Tedesco, but the superintendent took no action and allegedly asked that the matter not be documented. The governor's investigation of Bruin follows a series of internal shakeups at the state police, including the recent departure of two other members of the agency's human resources office. Bruin is a Glens Falls resident and former Warren County assistant district attorney who had previously been a general counsel for the state police. He is not a sworn member of the agency, although he commands more than 5,000 troopers, investigators, and civilian support staff. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Raymond Pignon reports in the Columbia paper that school district communication specialist Mackenzie Rigg announced on October 3rd that Ichabod Crane School District Superintendent Susan Guntlow is leaving at the end of the school year. Guntlow said in a statement, and I quote, "This is one of the hardest decisions I have made in my life. I care deeply for all of our students and staff and the district as a whole. It is, however, time for a change, to seek more balance in my life, to start the next chapter," end quote. Guntlow became the Ichabod Crane Central School District's primary school principal in 2013, then became the district's principal of curriculum and instruction and professional development 4 years later. In 2019, she was appointed Ichabod Crane's assistant superintendent and became superintendent on July 1, 2020. The Ichabod Crane Board of Education now begins a search for a new superintendent. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, it will be sunny with a high near 73 degrees. And Thursday night, a chance of showers before 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 51 degrees. And on Friday, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 63 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 38 degrees. And that's your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Thursday, October 6th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM WGXC, including on the WGXC morning show at 9 a.m. Hear from Lukey Forbes, the civil rights coordinator for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, about the Clean Slate Act that's being proposed to help homeowners and renters. At 10 a.m., it's time for Situation Fluxus, the jazz show from Cheryl Kay. She's talking with Jeff Levinson and Jeremy Rose this morning. Then there's music from Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico on Transformational Listening at 11 a.m. And Alan Skerritt is live from Columbia County with R&B, fusion, blues, rock, and more on Crossroads in Rhythm after the local news at noon. 2 p.m., it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, the show that sets the latest news to the latest music. And then it's time to turn on the news at 3 p.m., as our former president claims he can do anything. 4 p.m., the WGXC afternoon show is live from Hudson. And then at 8 p.m., it's time for Donna and Honey's Love Motel with some relationship advice for you. Disco 3000 beams in from Montreal at 9 p.m., and The Magic Stranger takes over at 10 p.m. live from Columbia County on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Greene County will host the Household Hazardous Waste Collection event from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on October 9th. While Greene County's webpage for the event does not include the location, the webpage for the waste transfer stations in the county says it is at Greene County Highway Department, 67 Scott Lane in Athens. Anyone dropping off household hazardous waste must prove they are a county resident with a driver's license or utility bill. Normal trash and electronics and recyclables will not be accepted. Residents must attend at times by their last names, and those with the first letter of their last name beginning with A through F allowed to drop off at 8 to 9 a.m., letters G through K from 9 to 10 a.m., L through P from 10 to 11 a.m., Q through U from 11 a.m. until noon, and V through Z from noon until 1 p.m.
Listening to Quintron's Weather Warlock. Live stream of an analog drone synthesizer played by the weather, made by the New Orleans-based artist Quintron. You can listen to the Quintron Weather Warlock take the changes in weather at Wave Farm in Greene County and hear it anytime, 24 hours a day at wavefarm.org/listen. Go to any WGXC.org webpage and click on the listen button to hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, turning the changes in precipitation and sunlight and wind and temperature into sound.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, October 6th. Local early morning temperatures showing a tight gradient ranging from 43 in Bern to 47 in Woodstock. Regional average soil temperature is 56 degrees. And the closest possible snowfall today is 700 miles away north of Lake Superior in the province of Ontario. Today will be great to get out and enjoy the fall colors, mostly sunny with a high of 73 happening at 3 p.m. Overnight, we see a low of 54 before coming back to 69 degrees with a light chance for rain in the afternoon on Friday. Temperatures drop to 38 degrees overnight, which means a frost warning for Friday night, Saturday morning. And don't forget those coats this weekend. Saturday looks dry with a high of 56 and a stiff breeze. Overnight, it should hit 41 degrees. Then Sunday, a little warmer, hitting 62, but also bringing some stronger wind. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:20 a.m., low tide at 7:11 a.m., high tide again at 1:01 p.m., then low tide once again at 7:27 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 61 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 6:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:53 a.m. Looking way up, we see a 25% chance of X-class flares today, and plasma levels are becoming nominal. Solar wind speed is currently 517 kilometers per second at 9.0 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 5 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 151, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Devon of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with Cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
You got to try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Not too stupid, intelligible, and cute as Cupid. Knowledgeable, but not always right. Salvageable, and free for the night. While my heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. The poor thing's blind as a bat, getting up, falling down, getting up. Fall in love with a chicken with its head cut off. Whoa, Nelly. My wife doesn't understand me. Many dozens hope to land me. I'm for free love and I'm in free fall. This could be love or nothing at all. My heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. The poor thing's blind as a bat, getting up, falling down, getting up. Who'd fall in love with a chicken with its head cut off? stars exploding in the night, or electric eels under the covers. We don't have to be anything quite so unreal. Let's just be lovers. Chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. Poor things, blind as a bat, getting up, falling down, getting up. Who'd fall in love with a chicken with its head cut off?
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We're here today because we wanted to tell you in person that we're thinking of you and we're not leaving. We're not leaving until this gets done. I promise you that.
President Joe Biden arrived in Fort Myers, Florida, where he got a firsthand look at the immense damage caused by Hurricane Ian. Biden announced the federal government would pay 100% of the costs related to rescue and recovery efforts for 60 days. The news was welcomed by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who called the federal government's response to the disaster exceptional.
We are cutting through the red tape, and that's from local government, state government, all the way up to the president. So we appreciate the team effort.
Though water and power services have been restored to most of the affected areas, rescue efforts continue. The storm's death toll has risen to at least 100 people. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reacted to the decision by OPEC, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, to cut oil production by 2 million barrels per day.
What we've been clear about is the need for energy supply to meet demand. That's what we've been working on across the board, and we've done our part.
The move is expected to boost Russia's war effort in Ukraine. The U.S. plans to release 10 million more barrels of oil from its strategic petroleum reserve to counter an expected increase in gas prices. With roughly 30 days until the midterm elections, Representative Chahana Hayes of Connecticut held a forum on reproductive freedom with Vice President Kamala Harris.
As women's rights are being eviscerated all over the country, it is critical that we take action to enshrine women's reproductive rights into law and protect the health and well-being of all women and all people.
Abortion has been a major topic in the 5th Congressional District's tight race between Hayes and her Republican challenger, former state senator George Logan. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland announced a major expansion of the Sand Creek Massacre National Historical Site in southeastern Colorado. The site honors the more than 200 Cheyenne and Arapaho, mostly women and children, killed by the U.S. Cavalry in 1864. Haaland said it is the Interior Department's responsibility to tell the story of our nation. Finally, history was made at Kennedy Space Center in Florida as SpaceX launched its latest mission to the International Space Station with the first Native American woman on board. Nicole Mann is a Marine Corps pilot and NASA astronaut and will serve as mission commander. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We've been spending time this week on the origins and outline of Moore v. Harper, the important Supreme Court case testing a fringe constitutional doctrine called the independent state legislature theory. If embraced by the majority, it could alter American democracy as we've known it for 235 years. At stake is whether state legislatures have the ultimate authority over elections, higher authority than federal statutes and courts, higher than state Supreme Courts, and higher than a governor's veto. The U.S. Supreme Court has already said in 2019 that only state courts have the authority to decide partisan redistricting and gerrymandering cases. That decision essentially greenlighted widespread gerrymandering in the 2020 redistricting process. The Brennan Center for Justice and other scholars suggest that with unchecked power, legislatures could change the slate of electors for a presidential election or overturn election results. Ballot initiatives could be nullified. State legislatures could ignore the U.S. or state constitution's voting right provisions and establish new, more draconian barriers to voting. Existing state laws like early voting or voting by mail could be repealed without the check of a gubernatorial veto. In short, the impact of Moore versus Harper could reshape American democracy, and it could be one of the most consequential and destructive Supreme Court decisions of our time. More on the case and groups taking action can be found at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
A pity she does not exist. A shame he's not a fag. The only girl I ever loved.
I'm Tom Rowe here in Accra, and on the phone with us we have Lukey Forbes, the civil rights coordinator for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. I think, Lukey, you're here. You want to speak mostly about the Clean Slate Act, and I guess I don't even know where that is. I guess a number of cities and towns have passed that. Hudson almost did, and then it was vetoed. But there's talk about doing it statewide, I think, right?
Yeah, so the Clean Slate Act is a statewide proposed piece of legislation that will help create an automatic ceiling process for people who have criminal backgrounds. It'll be 7 years for felonies and 3 years for misdemeanors. It is a ceiling, so police still have access to those records as well. Law enforcement will be able to look at it, and anyone who does a federal background check will also be able to see it when you're applying for jobs. Ultimately, what this does is it allows for people who have been restricted from housing, employment, and educational opportunities have access to second chances, since folks are restricted against and discriminated against for having criminal backgrounds. We watched as in other cities and states across America who have passed this law, like Connecticut, that the crime rate has and recidivism rate around people who are being released actually lowered. So this is something that is definitely a transformative piece of legislation. Again, it's a statewide proposed bill. However, local municipalities across New York have joined us in a moral tour to call on the state Senate and Assembly to pass this bill and then the governor to also sign it. Last year, it was passed through the Senate. However, the Assembly did not give us that same fortune. So we are working timelessly to again, gather more municipalities to join us on this moral tour, where they're passing what are called resolutions and proclamations through the county to call on their state legislators to ultimately pass this statewide piece of legislation. This is something that will affect everyone. It'll go into effect for everyone except people who have sexual crimes or have to be on any form of registry. Those folks won't qualify for automatic ceiling.
Can you help put us in the shoes of someone that's incarcerated and just getting out of jail or prison? And how important would this legislation be? What are they up against in those first moments out?
So when a person is first released, they're faced with several different things. They have to answer to a parole officer who's going to require that they have stable housing, that they find some form of employment, and that they're kind of maintaining programs. So it kind of becomes difficult for a person who's restricted from housing, who's restricted from access to employment, to honestly be able to secure those things within their first 6 months. However, this bill will not cover them. Unfortunately, New York's proposal is not as progressive as other states. In Connecticut, they actually count the time that a person is incarcerated towards where their record will be sealed, because it's very important that folks have that that grace period within that first 6 months and are allowed to have access to these things. Unfortunately, New York State does not offer that. However, with our proposal, those folks who have been out for about 7 years without committing any other infraction will now be able to have the privilege of having their records sealed. And statistically, if a person does not recite after 5 years, they're most likely not going to recite. So these are the individuals that have been able to come through every obstacle, make it over every obstacle and triumph. And now that they will be able to receive these ceilings, it's a possibility to help New York urban community generate about $87 billion within this community, specifically every year from now on, once this bill is passed.
And there's certainly people locally that are of the opinion that someone who's been incarcerated should not receive sort of benefits or something. But you're basically saying that this program kind of pays for itself in the way it saves money elsewhere by lowering recidivism and other things like that.
Not only does it do that, this has nothing to do with anyone who's currently incarcerated. This will only affect those who have been released and after completing parole supervision, which in New York State, folks are normally sentenced to the maximum amount of time on parole supervision, which is about 5 years. And then after completing parole supervision, they would then have to be out without getting another rearrest or infraction for several years for a felony and then 3 years for a misdemeanor. So this is something that, like we know in the United States of America, 53% of Americans have a family member who's been touched by the criminal legal system. And we know there's about 2.3 million New Yorkers. This is a study done last year, so that number has most likely significantly increased due to the hardships of COVID and things like that. We know this is only going to be a benefit to our communities. It will not put our community at any exacerbated risk, because again, these are the individuals who beat the statistic of not reciting and still were able to navigate the communities with the amount of restrictions that they currently have on them, leaving them unstable. So now having the ability to become stable, this is a no-brainer bill. We know that when you restrict folks when you restrict folks from housing, education, and job opportunities, it does not just affect them. It also affects their children. So this causes a generational gap of restriction, of access to resources. So when your family is limited in access to resources that they could provide you as a child, you're most likely going to have limited access to resources. This is why we see studies that show children born in poverty most likely stay in poverty, and children whose parents have a criminal background most likely develop one themselves. And that's because of these types of things where our system has these holes and gaps that kind of leave people in this state of poverty and scarcity that causes them to kind of move towards crime. We see if you look across the United States, you see poverty and crime go hand in hand. So we got to really take every step that we can to allow people to get back into the workforce, allow people to become to sustain stable housing and get themselves back together.
And so does this need to be reintroduced into the legislature, or where are you in the legislative process?
So last year it did not, it was passed in the Senate and not the Assembly. So in 2023, it's going to go back in front of them. Hopefully there's a special session where they have the political will. Well, better words than used than political will. Right now, we really need the political courage to really give folks that access to second chance. As you were saying, there may be folks who just don't understand what it means to have access to second chances. They feel like, okay, you're letting the bad guys be able to be in. It's having the political courage to go against that misinformation and to also address the misinformation as they're coming across it. So we'll be going back in 2023. If not, hopefully, if there's a special session in November, they bring this up as well.
So correct me on this if I'm wrong, but it passed the Senate last year, and I believe Senator Michelle Hinchey was in favor of it. Senator Daphne Jordan was against it. And in the Assembly, I think I'm pretty sure Chris Tagg is not going to be voting for this. I think Dede Barrett was opposed. Are those right or wrongs? Are you targeting certain? Do you want people to call certain officials?
We are definitely targeting certain officials, and Dede Barrett being covering Hudson, and Hudson being one of the areas that did pass the Clean Slate resolution last year. It's just kind of sad when you see a lot of the constituents are calling on this form of legislation. And again, if you look at the different municipalities who are joining in this moral tour, there is a large amount within the Western New York and in that little bucket of the Hudson Valley that are calling on their state legislators to get on side of this. So, yes, if folks are listening to this and they also know anyone or personally have been impacted by this, or just would like for America to kind of like do as we say, when a person is going into these correctional facilities and then they're placed on parole supervision, that we are allowing them actual access to second chances. As we're telling people when they're going into these systems that it's only to correct themselves, we're lying when we continue on with the perpetual punishment. So, yes, if you are listening to this and you would like to stop perpetual punishment, I encourage you to call your state senator and assembly member and encourage them to co-sponsor and sign on to the Clean Slate Act and help us get this over the border.
Is there a place online people can find out more information about the Clean Slate Act?
You can look it up on cleanslateny.org. I repeat, cleanslateny.org. You can look at our Instagram at cleanslateny or us on Twitter at cleanslateny.
And we're speaking with Lukey Forbes, the civil rights coordinator for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. Tell us just briefly what else the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition does.
So we're a housing coalition that focuses on building rights amongst tenants, as well as those who are in the urban community. And in my position personally, the civil rights coordinator was birthed out of the fact that we see that housing instability can cause for folks to develop a criminal background. And when you develop a criminal background, it can cause you to be housing instable. So it's very important that when we're looking at these things, we're realizing the intersectionality, and we're working effortlessly to address both of these things at the same time.
And in particular, you have a new program. What is it called? Books and Breakfast?
Yes, the Books and Breakfast program. This is a program that we're expanding throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital Region. We currently have one being hosted in Catskill, one in Hudson, throughout the different public housing complexes. We were recently out in Bliss Towers. We also have one that's being hosted outside of in the Albany Free School in Albany. And then we're also going to be launching one in Saratoga soon.
And do you need book donations for that, or anything?
People are always welcome to donate in any form or capacity that they can. You can look us up. We're Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. You can find us online. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. Also, like, we're looking for books, but specifically Black written books and books around Black people, so that we can just continue to educate the community and give them diversity in the things that they're reading.
All right. We've been speaking with Lukey Forbes, the Civil Rights Coordinator for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. Are you positive that we're going to have some affordable housing sometime in the future in the Hudson Valley?
I am 100% positive we're going to have some affordable housing in the Hudson Valley within some time. We're working effortlessly with the city, the county, to make sure that we can secure some things. My colleagues can speak a lot more on that. We are working effortlessly to do to address the affordable housing crisis, as we see that is something not only going on in New York, it's something going on across the world.
Yes, and it's driving all the other issues to some extent.
Like I said, the intersectionality between all these things it's very important that we're noticing that.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about the Clean Slate legislation that got through the Senate last year, but not the Assembly. And another try is going around this year. So we'll check in with you as that progresses, hopefully.
I appreciate the opportunity to get on here and continue to promote the work that folks are doing across the state. And I look forward to continue to build with you and putting this word out there.
That was 2020 new music from the Magnetic Fields, based in Hudson, New York, with Come Life, Shaker Life, from the 2020 album Quickies.
A new piece of legislation would provide New Yorkers with further access to electric vehicles. The direct EV sales bill, still under consideration by the New York legislature, would remove restrictions on the sale of electric vehicles. Currently, 5 stores, all of which are downstate in New York City and Long Island, can sell EVs directly to consumers. James Chen with EV maker Rivian finds that allowing this level of access is long overdue. As the U.S. makes the push to get more people driving electric vehicles, Chen says the lack of direct sales has been a roadblock, making it harder for the public to get information about electric vehicles.
The prohibition on direct sales in a number of states, including New York, really has stifled the ability for consumers to learn about them. I mean, at the end of the day, to be able to purchase or to be able to sell an electric vehicle, there's a lot more involved than the traditional gasoline-powered vehicle.
He notes that when people go to buy a gasoline-powered vehicle, there's more research done beforehand, and they're familiar with the technology. However, without direct sales, people are left with many questions about EVs that dealers aren't able to answer right away. This unfamiliarity has kept electric vehicles from being in vogue, but, he says, passage of this new bill would address many lingering doubts. Despite moving toward electric vehicles, there are still plenty of detractors who Chen sees as motivated by misconceptions. One in particular has been that EVs are somewhat lesser than gasoline-powered cars.
I think the biggest misconception is that the vehicle is somehow a compromise, whether it be range or the ability to find a place to charge up. Most people will charge up, 70-80% of charging will be at home. You come home at night, you plug in your vehicle, and you wake up every morning with a quote-unquote full tank.
Some critics say the legislation gets around current regulations. Actually, Chen says the new bill would allow electric vehicle companies to invest in New York State and widen the market for consumer variety. He says this would regulate new EV companies and would allow people to have alternatives for where to buy EVs. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When students at Cesar Chavez High School in Phoenix finish classes each day, many walk along a nearby road. Sophomore Joanna Echevarria says that during heat waves, the journey gets very uncomfortable.
Like 3 minutes into walking, you're already sweating.
Her classmate Rosa Ramirez agrees.
During that time of day, it's excruciating walking to the library, let's say, or walking to the park.
But that's changing. Echevarria and Ramirez recently volunteered, along with other students and residents, to help city workers plant more than 250 trees along the sidewalk. As the trees grow, they'll provide much-needed shade for people walking or waiting at the bus stop. As the climate warms, Phoenix will see more hot days, so the tree planting project is part of an effort to create cool corridors along busy pedestrian routes. Ramirez says she worries about global warming, and it felt good to do something that would help protect her community.
When I see the trees, like when I walk past them, I think about it. I'm like, I planted this area of trees over here. And I get really happy thinking about it, knowing that one day they'll get like bigger and that future generations will enjoy the benefits that we instilled in place for them.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Offshore wind is becoming an increasingly popular way for coastal communities to hit their carbon neutral goals. According to a report from the U.S. Department of Energy, state policies could procure more than 39,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2040. Because of this demand, more than 340 elected officials are asking the federal government to increase national offshore wind goals and accelerate the permitting process. Some cities are also looking to the lucrative wind turbine manufacturing business as a way to recoup some lost industry. Mary Lupien with the Rochester City Council feels this could be a match for Western New York.
Industry has left. We used to be a huge manufacturing city, and we still have many of the bones of factories and industrial areas that could be built back up to support this industry. And I think we still have a lot of work to do in terms of doing the studies to understand exactly what it takes.
She adds this would greatly benefit Rochester because, in addition to the new jobs this creates, it makes wind turbine parts more easily accessible to the city. Although there are many concerns about offshore wind and how it will work, a central concern has been about its impacts on the fishing industry. People are curious how certain shipping lanes and fishing routes will navigate around the wind turbines. But Rye City Council member Sarah Goddard feels this isn't quite the problem it's being made out to be. Instead, she feels the facts should speak for themselves.
I think sometimes there's just a lack of understanding and a fear of the unknown, and to the extent that policymakers and lawmakers can get in front of those concerns and address those concerns before they become misinformation.
Goddard feels this is a major worry for communities that thrive off the fishing industry. She wants to see elected officials take charge of information regarding offshore wind and ensure their constituents know the truth. This year's hurricane season has proved that climate change's effects are growing in power. Hurricane Ian, which devastated the Caribbean and Florida, has led to major flooding in other states. Atlantic County Commissioner Karen Fitzpatrick says flooding after Ian has been problematic for Atlantic City residents. However, she notes, high levels of flooding have become a regular occurrence in the area.
Back day flooding here on Absecon Island, where Atlantic City is, used to be a once in a while, maybe once a quarter issue. Now, children can't get to school on full moon and high tide days because they're flooded into their homes.
One thing Fitzpatrick notes is that people need to acknowledge that it's a different world. Although they may have memories of how things used to be, she says things have to change in order to halt or slow down climate change's effects. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. We start each renewable weather forecast off with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says the Mobil in Cairo has the lowest price of a gallon there at $3.55 a gallon. The air quality forecast is better than Wednesday. It's down to 14 in the good category. The UV index is a 4, and that may be the highest it's going to get for many months, as Thursday is actually going to be mostly sunny with a high of 70. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Thursday night, there's a slight chance of showers before 2 a.m., a 20% chance, with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 51. Friday, a 20% chance of showers in the morning, then turning partly sunny with a high of 61 and a west wind northwest 8 to 13 miles per hour in the morning. Friday night, the forecast is for cloudy skies with a low around 36 and a northwest wind 9 to 14 miles per hour for those windmills. And Saturday, there could be frost in the morning, then it turns warmer and sunny with a high of 52 and a low around 37. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Here's a brand new song from the Magnetic Fields 50-song memoir from 2017. Here's Fox and I from the Magnetic Fields.
Fox and I have the Roland TV 303. I should think it will be easy, miming on top of the bus. Fox and I, liberated from emotions, exploring other oceans. What use have we for hell? Anyone can change into a machine. Go your way, black or blue. And
arrive. Decades later at my DJ night, our conversation takes flight. Kraftwerk and clavichords.